Hi, this is Tessa from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This talk was recorded live at DFTB 18. Enjoy the show.
Okay, neonatal intubation. So let me start, as Casey said, I'm a paediatrician in a regional centre, not an intensive care specialist, I'm not an anaesthetist, and I'm not a neonatologist. So what have I got to say on this topic? Well, in our centre, we would be involved in intubating babies many times during the year. In 1 year, I might be involved in 10 intubations, and then the following year, one. How do I maintain my skills? But also, how do I support our trainees as they develop and maintain their own skills? So hopefully, this will be helpful for some of you going forward. So let me start with a story. There's a baby. Let's call her Jane. Jane's mother is diagnosed during the pregnancy with gestational diabetes. A plan is made for her to be delivered by elective cesarean section. At the time of her birth, Jane is born kicking and screaming. She's pink and vigorous and active. And she and her mother continue their care on the postnatal ward. Things seem to be fine. And then, over the subsequent hours, she's noticed to make a grunting, whining noise. She's working hard, her breathing is faster and more rapid, her colour doesn't look great, and the midwife escalates immediately to the paediatric team on for the day. The paediatric team take one look at Jane and bring us straight to our special care nursery. Oxygen is applied, CPAP is commenced, an intravenous line is placed, bloods are taken and antibiotics started. A chest x-ray is done. It shows a ground glass pattern throughout the chest, in keeping with respiratory distress syndrome. She seems to rally a little bit, but then her oxygen requirements continue to increase. Her carbon dioxide levels are rising. We increase her CPAP pressures and discuss her case with our local team, the Piper team, who do retrievals to our area. A decision is made that if she were to worsen, that we should be prepared for intubation, but they feel she's at a point where she will benefit from retrieval and ongoing care in a tertiary center. Again, she seems to rally, but then things start to worsen once again. The team are on their way. They think they'll be about 2 hours. Are we happy to proceed with the neonatal intubation? I gather the team around me. Who do I have? It's now 1, 2 in the morning. I've got a very experienced neonatal nurse who's been around for several intubations, but I've also got a very junior nurse. She's only recently graduated. She's never seen a neonatal intubation before. I've also got a resident who only 2 days ago was working purely in our emergency department. And my pediatric registrar is sorting out a patient in status epilepticus on the pediatric ward. What do we need to do? Let's get together. We talk about the pre-medications that are required. The nurses are back and forth. Where's this drug? Where's that drug? They're knocking into things. I can sense the anxiety. There's lots of conversations happening. I'm trying to coordinate with the senior nurse, but she's needing to go off and tell the junior nurses where the medication is kept. My pediatric resident seems to be running around in circles. I can see her, then she's gone. Okay, let's get everyone together. Pre-medication given. I can feel my heart racing. I've got my laryngoscope blade. We're ready to go. I pop the blade in. There's a big crash. The resident's rushed into the trolley that she didn't see there. I can't get a great view here. I pull out. I'm not happy. Again, hands sweating, heart racing. This is not good. This is not good for Jane. This is not good for her parents. This is not good for us. Take a deep breath, everyone. Pre-med is given again. Everybody ready? Jane's sats are good. This time, the laryngoscope gives me a fantastic view, and we place the tube in. We start ventilation. Oxygen requirements come down. Her carbon dioxide improves. And by the time Piper come, about an hour and a half later, blood gas is perfect and she looks comfortable. But we are all still shaking. This did not feel good. How do we do it better? So we thought we'd reflect on this as a team, given that we will at times intubate several babies and then none, and our team keeps varying. So the three aspects we wanted to reflect on were the skills of the intubator, the team and the environment that they were working in, but also the patient. So intubating is a difficult and complex task. It's one of the key milestones if you're involved in looking after newborns. Newborns that might present to regional general paediatricians, newborns that present to mixed emergency departments, as well as tertiary centres. How do you develop these skills? How do you learn these skills? How do you maintain these skills? Is it enough to see one, do one, teach one? Well, we do know that experience seems to make a difference. You can see here, this is from 8,000 deliveries in different centres across America. The paediatric residents had about a 40% chance of being successful in their first attempt to intubate a newborn. In contrast, the fellows and attendings, or consultants as we would call them here, had a mean success rate of 64%, not 100, with some standard variation. Now, most of us have learnt these skills during our neonatal rotations. But what we also know is that most of our trainees now going through neonatal rotations are seeing fewer babies being ventilated. There's an increase in non-invasive techniques. How do we make sure they make the most of each opportunity when they do their neonatal rotations? Well, it appears you've got to try and work out how you maximize these exposures. These are graphs of four different doctors recording the probability of their success. On the x-axis, you've got the number of intubation opportunities each doctor had, and on the y-axis, the probability of their success based on their previous attempts. So they all start with about a 30% success rate. Let's take the first doctor, A. Let's call them Andre. Andre starts with 30% success, not successful, probability drops down, not successful, probability drops down. Over 6%, six attempts, you can see that graph falling down. In contrast with let's say Dr. D in the bottom right, let's call him Dimitri. That particular doctor, 30% success rate, successful, improved probability of success, further success until they reach competence. So how do we help our trainees and doctors develop these skills with these limited number of opportunities? We don't really know the ins and outs of why some people develop these skills quicker than others, but feedback is key. It's not just, I did it, I didn't do it. It's not just I'm good, I'm bad. We've got to be able to provide some much better feedback for ourselves as individuals to reflect on our skills, but also to support those that we're training. And this is where I think video laryngoscopy has been key in neonatology. Not only is it an opportunity to be able to share what you're seeing with the person supporting you in the intubation, it's a chance for the whole team to see what's happening. And this tool has been studied. We know when we look and analyze intubations that have been unsuccessful, one of the key issues has been that trainees have not adequately been familiar with the anatomy and physiology of the airway. We also know that attempts at routine suctioning are not always needed because the excessive secretions may not be impeding your view of the vocal cords. In fact, last year, Cochrane produced a paper saying that there was moderate evidence to suggest that use of video laryngoscopy improve the chance of a first successful neonatal intubation. There's still a lack of evidence around the timing for intubation and the need for multiple attempts, but there's certainly something to say for being able to share what you're doing with your trainer, to be able to reflect on that and improve, but also for the whole team to see what's happening so that they can make the next steps as part of this skill. And the other advantage is you can record what's happening. So here we have a view. The laryngoscope is placed in the velecula. The endotracheal tube is going in, not happy. Okay, great, much better view. We've got the vocal cords there, hitting the aryepiglottic folds, not making it through. Okay, and now we're in. And then the enthusiastic intubator, whoop, all the way in. It's okay, we can all see the video. Let's take that tube out. Okay, and that's got to be better for everyone, especially for our patients. But intubating and the skill of intubating is very much dependent on your environment and the team in which you work. So safety and success are intimately linked. It's about the person with the skill and how they work and communicate with the team. It's about the environment and understanding the ergonomics, as well as, of course, an understanding of your patient and their needs. So cognitive aids are very helpful ways of taking some of the stress out of these very highly challenging situations. These cognitive aids help to provide knowledge, they support the team in their communication and teamwork, and enable us to make sure we continue to advocate for our patient. This particular one is from New South Wales. There are very similar ones to the Royal Children's Hospital and other hospitals. Another fabulous cognitive aid that we use is the neonatal worksheet. This allows you to enter the age, gestation, and weight of your patient, and pre-designed drugs will be pulled up based on the weight of that child. This includes your pre-medications, it includes inotropes and antibiotics. And for hospitals where we are not used to dealing with babies of this size, such as our emergency departments where we have a mixed pediatric and adult service, or with nurses on our unit who are not familiar because they've just rotated to their neonatal position, this gives everybody much more confidence and provides an important safety checklist. And then another key part that we've used to untangle some of the components of team and environment has been simulation. We hold monthly simulations in situ between our pediatric and neonatal units. We have the support of our nurse unit managers and directors, where we use our actual equipment, actual medication, and we use the team on call for that day. It's enabled us to troubleshoot, it's improved communication, it's allowed us to develop certain procedures. For example, we now have a little bundle of drugs which we use for pre-meds that are easy grasp for whichever nurse is required to go and get those medications. But then, of course, it's about the patient. It's about babies like Jane. How do we make sure that this is as painless a procedure? Because intubation is uncomfortable. It's a painful process. But if we make sure our patient is comfortable, we're going to minimize any physiological disturbance, and that's going to improve our chances of a successful intubation. Pre-medication has been very useful. Now, there will be times when there will not be an opportunity to use pre-medication. This is because it's a life-threatening situation. There's no IV access, or because resuscitation must occur in the delivery room. But what we do know is that in lots of situations and scenarios, pre-medication will not only make this a more comfortable process and procedure for your patient, but it will also improve your chances of success on that first attempt. The three main categories of drugs that we use in neonatal intubation are a combination of an opioid, atropine, and a muscle relaxant. The most common opioids used are generally morphine or fentanyl. Now, fentanyl has a peak onset within 3 minutes, and it's generally my drug of choice. Morphine takes up to 15 minutes to work, so if you're using that, you need to give time for it to have its analgesic and sedative effect. Atropine is used to depress the vagal stimulation that occurs when you insert the laryngoscope into the airway and also the endotracheal tube. It will also have an effect of decreased secretions, and it will generally work within a few minutes. Muscle relaxants choice will vary, but most commonly we use in our hospital succinylcholine. Its onset is within 30 to 60 seconds, and it lasts generally 2 to 4 minutes. You need to make sure that your patient is well hydrated, you've checked for things like abnormalities in potassium, and that they continue to be closely monitored, particularly in relation to hypo and hypertension. So reflecting on our case with baby Jane, have we changed what we do when we look after these patients when they come to our neonatal unit? Have we made a difference? Well, simulation has allowed us to explore lots and lots of these questions. But at the end of the day, how do I know? Well, 24 hours after one of our neonatal in situ simulations, a real scenario occurred with a real patient with almost identical issues. And on this occasion, the team coordinated quickly. They identified roles. The drugs were swiftly and quickly obtained, and all the checklists and cognitive aids meant there were swift and clear prescriptions and delineation. The team were calm, they communicated clearly, which created optimal conditions for the patient and the baby and their parents, but ultimately resulted in a successful first intubation. Thank you.
Okay, once again, thank you very much, Shabs. If anyone has any questions, please make your way to the mic. This is your chance. You could be famous. Or else, Jess, what did you have from Twitter?
Yeah, just mostly comments of just interest, but given my own biases around simulation, which I won't air, they're positive. Have you sort of got a structure to ensure that the majority of staff get through it? And also for these sort of low frequency, high acuity events, what's the dose to achieve what you're talking about?
So we don't have a perfect formula, and I think one of our issues is sustainability, because ultimately the funding structure for SIM in a regional hospital, I think it's not as much as I would love to see happen. That said, I have to say the value of the in-situ SIM has been great, because I think we've created buy-in from our staff, particularly our nursing staff, But also it's created fantastic memories. So though our junior staff are rotating all the time, what you find is there's a lot more advocacy within our nursing staff so that they're familiar with where things are, the cognitive aids, the checklist, and that immediately changes the environment and sort of temperature at which everyone's working in this sort of stressful environment. And so, yeah, I would love us to roll out more.
Cool. All right. Any other questions? I have a question from the floor, please.
Andrew McDonald from Campbelltown. We use our MET team, which has a variety of challenges, but there are sometimes people with quite a few skills there. How do you ever use those as well?
Yeah, so actually when we call, but both in real life, when you have a scenario, and also when we do the simulation, depending on how the situation goes, we actually encourage what we call a neonatal response. And for us, that's the sort of consultant, registrar and resident, neonatal nurse, and then we also have anaesthetic input as well. I think we haven't quite got the buy-in from some of the anaesthetic staff for the in-situ sim just because of their other requirements and pressures. But that's only something we're looking to build on. And I think the response works because I think it highlights the significance of what's happening and alerts the rest of the hospital to what's going on.
Okay, we have another question. Please come to the mic.
My name's John Blythe. I'm a GP, actually. Has the use of the Nearpuff machine reduced the need for intubation?
So I guess in the situations where we find we're needing to intubate, no, because these are invariably critically unwell children in terms of respiratory or sepsis or cardiac or metabolic issues. I think the issue overall is we are intubating less and less, and so it's becoming something that people are coming to with less skill, or that we ourselves are feeling we haven't done this for a while, which I think is why us thinking about this question has been really important.
Cool. Okay. If there's no other questions, we'll thank Shep. Beautiful.